This is a download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts. bbclearningenglish.com presents Talk About English, a series of radio features that support your English language studies.
Hello and welcome to Talk About English. Today in our series, Who on Earth Are We?, Mark Beebe examines the differences between individual and collective-based cultures. If you're someone who likes privacy, your own space, making your own decisions, you probably belong to a culture where the individual is central. But if you like to have other people around you and feel the need to do the right thing, your culture is probably one where the group, or the collective, is the most important unit. Here's Mark.
This individual-collective distinction is very important in the study of culture, and we'll be considering it in detail over the next two programmes. So, to begin, here's Rebecca Fong, a teacher of intercultural communication at the University of the West of England, with an introduction to the individualism-collectivism dimension.
The individualism-collectivism dimension, or model, if you like, refers to the relationship between any individual in a society and any group or collective in that society. Now, what do we mean by collective? A collective could be a small group, such as a family or a workplace or a group of friends or a club, or it could be big groups, like an individual's relationship to the nation as a whole. Obviously, how you are brought up and integrated into your society and live together with the people in your society will very much affect the way that your society is organised, the way families live together, the way institutions work, the way education, politics, religion are organised, and so on.
Rebecca Fong. The way you live together with the people in your society will affect the way your society is organised. People in both individualist and collectivist cultures belong to groups, but the difference lies in whether people choose to belong to a group, how they feel about the groups they belong to, and how important an influence the group has on a person's life. Here's Rebecca again, with comments from Devon Crone from Britain and Emma Kambangula from Namibia on the connections between the individual and the group in individualist and collectivist cultures.
In individualist cultures, people are linked together very loosely. They're brought up to follow their own individual goals and their own preferences, and everyone in the society is rewarded differently according to what they personally manage to achieve. So they'll make choices about which work groups they belong to, who their friends are, which religion they want to belong to, which clubs they want to belong to, and so on. This may mean that people don't have very much loyalty to any particular group, so they could switch company, for example, if they felt that their personal growth in one particular company had come to an end, and in order to develop, they would have to move to another company and do something different.
I think in terms of whether Britain is a very individualistic society, I would agree. My family, for example, is very separate. It works well as a family unit, but I would say first and foremost we are individuals and then we are a family unit. My mother brought me up to be very individual, and she deemed that as a very important quality in life. So from a very early age, I was taught to look after myself and go out and do my own things, take initiatives and do what I wanted to do.
In collectivist cultures, people's own personal preferences are downplayed, and their loyalty is first and foremost to a group or a collective. So what happens is that group goals become the most important thing, and people act in accordance with the duties of any particular collective that they're in. You'll probably have a very strong affiliation with your family group, not by choice, but because that's part of the way your society is organised. And it'll be very important that within these groups you work together, and there'll be a mutual search for a collective harmony within these groups.
In Namibia, we are more collective. I'll take an example of me and my sister. I remember there was a time that we didn't speak to each other. When my other sister's husband died, we went to the funeral and the family was called together to come and solve Emma and her sister's problem. We were speaking and it came to the extent where we got at loggerheads with my sister again, and they had to intervene, take us separately to different rooms, and everyone gave their side of the story, and this cast it in our absence among the other members of the family. And when we were called together, it was like we were in court, everyone was having questions until we reached an agreement.
BBClearningEnglish.com.
But why should some cultures value the individual while others value the group? Well, some cultural experts believe that there are historical reasons for this. Rebecca Fong explains, with assistance from Professor James Keegan from Bethany College in the United States of America and Mahmoud Jamal from Pakistan.
It has been suggested that individualist cultures may have started as the hunter-gatherer type societies, who had to be more self-sufficient, who had to survive at all costs, and therefore became quite aggressive in their approach, if you like, more competitive.
250 years ago, this would be the frontier, and you existed in the way in which you could look after yourself. Yes, there might be neighbours around, but they're not going to be all that close. And you build your log cabin and you use it as a fort. You go out and you till your little bit of land. So historically, the individual takes care of him or herself.
Collectivist cultures may have started more as the agrarian societies, more peaceful collectives of people living on the land, farming together, working together, sharing resources together, and so on.
On the whole, South Asian culture is not a greatly individualistic culture. Of course, things have changed, you know, and are changing very rapidly. But there's the family, the extended family, the community. You, as an individual, have responsibilities and duties to the collective, and you have to uphold them regardless. But I think the modern industrialized world is impacting on that. So it is breaking down. But on the whole, I think it still remains true that the individual is less important than the community in South Asian culture as a whole, in India, Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Mahmoud Jamal. Cultures change. And nowadays, it's hard for us to see whether a culture was based on a frontier type of society where the individual was forced to take care of himself, or on a more cooperative farming model. But we can say that much of the modern industrial world, the USA and parts of Europe, for example, tends to be individualistic. What's more, as Mahmoud Jamal suggests, the individualistic modern industrial world seems to be influencing the character of some collective cultures. We'll be exploring this idea a bit further in our next programme. In preparation, here are Annabel Port from Britain, Mounia El Kouch from Morocco, and James Keegan in the USA, helping Rebecca Fong describe some of the more obvious differences between individualist and collectivist cultures.
Individuals in individualistic societies will be looking for individual freedom. They'll be looking for personal truth, their own personal idea of what is sincere, real. They'll be looking for money as success. They'll be looking for personal goals, personal objectives to be fulfilled.
I think Britain is very individualistic. I think it starts with the family and it goes on through education and through to the workplace in business. Because we want more, we become very competitive, constantly striving to improve ourselves and competing against the next person and not necessarily working together for a common aim.
In the collectivist societies, there'll be much greater need for social harmony and action as defined by other people, virtuous action. action that will be accepted and approved of by a group. And there'll be a lot of loyalty within those groups.
The family are very much involved in your life. You can't do anything without permission, in a sense, of your close siblings and parents. You can't just run away, get married, and that's it, be the end of it. You can't have a girlfriend or boyfriend without your parents knowing and giving their approval. And they would give advice, perhaps sometimes which you don't want to hear, but at the same time, they think they're helping. Things like that would shock a Westerner, in a sense.
People within these collective groups get to understand each other's personalities, each other's roles in that group, and they begin to communicate intuitively. Silence is much more an integral part of this kind of group because people know what's going on in another person's mind. You don't have to say everything that you're thinking. Communication amongst individuals in individualist societies tends to be quite verbal. You explain your feelings, what your opinion is important, and silence is in some ways quite embarrassing.
I think Westerners, and I'll include Europeans in general in this, you know, we don't like silences. We have to fill things in, particularly here in the United States. We begin to get edgy. We begin to want an answer immediately. Other cultures do observe a formality. We're an informal society. In order to achieve your own individual purposes, you have to establish very quick relationships. And an example of that, of course, is how quickly we use first names. We know people and we treat them as if they were real long-time friends and we've known them 2 minutes.
Professor James Keegan. It's very important when talking about individualism and collectivism to remember that these are very broad categories. In fact, they're really the two extreme ends of a long line. No culture really falls at either end. Cultures tend towards one end or the other. So, where does your culture fall along the line? Do you belong to a more individualist or a more collectivist culture? We'll help you answer that question by looking at more of the differences between the two in our next programme. But I'll leave you with a final word from Mahmoud Jamal, who sees the benefits of both.
In my case, in case of a lot of other people who came abroad to study, part of the attraction also was to be able to live an individual life. And you can never beat going to another culture to live an individual life because you are an alien anyway. I would recommend to a lot of people who feel that their culture or their community is bothering them to go to another culture, experience what it's like to be an individual.
That was Talk About English from bbclearningenglish.com.